Pilot TV this week, we are probing the cracks of marital bliss with an all-star cast in the four seasons on Netflix, getting in touch with our inner Sherlock as Natasha Lyonne returns to her sleuthing ways in the second season of Whodunit Poker Face on Sky, and getting embroiled in more medical misdemeanors in season two of Malpractice on ITV. Welcome to Pilot TV, your essential guide to every show that matters. And I am delighted, overjoyed, yes, cock-a-hoop, to be surrounded by the radiant faces of Boyd Hilton, who is still a little sore from Arsenal's drubbing the other day, and Kay Ribeiro, who had high tea at Claridge's last night.
Yes, I did.
How are we both? How was tea? Did you have lots of marzipan? Tell me about it.
It was delightful. So for anyone who doesn't listen to Plus, first of all, why not?
Yeah.
But I was invited to Claridge's for afternoon tea, and it was BBC's...
And crucially, Boyd was not.
No.
That's important.
Don't
important part of this story.
Again.
No, totally snubbed.
He's in, he's in one of those moods.
No. It's just a factual fact.
Just a fact. Yeah. Just a fact, man. Just a fact.
But anyway, the invite was from BBC Studio and Agatha Christie Limited. But they didn't say why. But, you know, obviously, afternoon tea, hello, love afternoon tea, and also love Agatha Christie. So I was like, yes, I will do that. I'll take that for the team. I'll be the face of Pilot. And I went along, and actually, it turned out to be... It was quite an unusual event, because you go, and you didn't know why you were there, and there were random... seemingly random people like Anton Dubek was floating around, and various authors, and Jo Hartley, actress, was there, you know, and I was like, what's going on? Anyway, it turns out they were launching BBC Maestro, a new course, a writing course by Agatha Christie. Yes, in her words. So what
It's not right. The whole thing's big bottle wrong.
No, wait a minute. So it's a course about structure of writing, how to write a crime novel, in her words, so taken from interviews she's done, her letters to her agents, books. You know, they've got a group of historians that have worked on it, and Agatha Christie experts who've been working on this for a couple of years, written the script. So this part of it, I'm like... I'm actually okay with that bit, because I'm like, I'd love to learn from the Queen of Crime, you know, and it's her work, you know, it's her advice, right? Fine. What they've done, though, is they've got an actress to play her.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm. No, that I would be okay with if it was an actress just delivering the lines. But then what they've done is they've used AI.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm. To sort of make, you know, sort of recreate her features. So it's like, I think it's the actress's body, but it's like a composite of her face and voice.
Bigger bowl of wrong.
So it's AI, generated.
So you're in terms of the footage. Of AI all of a sudden.
No, I'm not. But I am still an Agatha Christie fan, and I think I'm interested to look at the course. They address the facts, but the fact that, you know, obviously they've used AI, and, you know, but it's been signed off by the estate, right? So, I mean, that's at least one good thing, I thought. At least they are sort of...
complicit.
Complicit, happy, you know, with the final product, and they've signed it off, and they feel like it's an accurate representation of her. I feel uncomfortable, obviously, with the idea of bringing back, you know, in a visual form. I don't mind the you know, necessarily like learning from her notes and her writing and the things that she felt in terms of how to write a good crime story. That to me is actually fine. I don't mind that. But it's more this sort of, the AI generated imagery, and it's ghoulish a little bit.
Gives you the proper ick, whole thing. Look, and I should say, Peter Cushing and Carrie Fisher are both in kind of digital form in, say, Rogue One, and actors have been used to kind of, and look, I don't mind that. It doesn't bother me. I think that what bothers me about this is an entirely commercial endeavor. And just to make a buck, they are essentially putting these words into beloved author Agatha Christie's mouth through the...
They're her words.
Some of, presumably. All of word?
It's all based on
her words,
yeah.
Just not her face.
Yes,
I kind of feel like I'd be happy with this if it was someone saying, we're going to do an Agatha Christie Maestro Masterclass, as their own personage, just saying we're going to draw upon the works of Agatha Christie to show you, like Rian Johnson could probably do it, to show this, how to structure a murder mystery using the work of Agatha Christie as our template. Nothing wrong with that. Absolutely fine. Fake digital, you know, Agatha fake Christie. Hard pass.
Yeah, I think it's a weird one, isn't it? It doesn't bother me entirely because I think because it's so obvious. I mean, you may have heard she's dead, right?
So, spoiler alert! He will not stop spoiling stuff.
I know.
Body crucially, who killed her? Where? With what?
Right.
And why?
Well, I think it's a how done it rather than a who done it in this case. A bit like Poker Face, but for me, I don't mind the AI element of it. I don't mind them even recreating her. That's all fine with the approval of the estate, etc. But getting people to charge, because the My Child, My Show program, it does, as you say, it is a business. It's an enterprise from the BBC. It's not part of the BBC's and public service arm. It's a separate thing. And they've got loads of people doing Jed Mercurio did one, and, you know, they've got
Lawrence.
Really good people. Yeah.
Do you remember I did the course?
Yeah, of course.
Brilliant people. But I think, to charge people to kind of see essentially what is like a best bits of Agatha Christie talking about stuff feels a bit, I don't know, that makes me feel a bit queasy. But the thing is, if it was free, I'd be like, oh, fine, yeah, great. You know, nothing wrong with that. Because she's obviously dead. They're obviously cobbled together using AI, you know, her words about writing.
So
that's all fine.
The group of historians and experts put together this script of her words.
If it was a bit, really, who'd, I mean, yeah, I don't know. You've got a free thing.
That's the thing. So I'll look at it and feedback. You can do a full review.
Only you can do a full review because only you've been given the thing, but and had the tea.
Delicious. Delicious.
I mean, you are obviously in the pay of Christie.
Yeah.
So we'll excuse that, but, you know.
I would have been anyway because I'm a massive, you know, AC fan.
Well, you were getting the Agatha Christie lowdown. I was at the Stanley Tucci launch where he proved yet again that he's an absolute delight.
Did you have a picture with him?
No.
So we can spot the difference.
I've got a picture with him when I hosted the Q&A at the BFI back when he used to host Q&As with him and others because he was in the cast of that Stephen Moffat show. Do you remember that Stephen Moffat show? Do you remember the one where there was people in the it was a serial killer?
Did you say you hosted it?
Yeah, I hosted the Q&A.
All I'm saying is, if you're hosting stuff and not remembering the titles or what it's about, I mean, it's troubling.
Hang on. I'm going to pretend for a second that I was listening all the way through that. Stephen Moffat, serial killer.
Stanley Tucci played the serial killer in the Stephen Moffat.
Oh, yes. I do remember the thing that you are referring to. I can't remember the name.
Inside Man.
That's it. Yes.
There we go. Inside Man.
That's the one.
And
the falling of the down of the stairs and the basement and all that stuff.
Exactly.
Yes.
And I met him then. He was talking about the Q&A. I got a photo taken with him then. And at that point, I actually said to him, in my mind, I look like you. And he went, no, you do.
Did you have your dark glasses, though? Dark rims? Did you have your...
I think you
look less like him now with these transparent ones.
Yeah, maybe. I'll have to dig that photo out, and check. But he was interviewed, he did a Q&A hosted by Elizabeth Day, who's a, you know...
Friend of his.
Premium podcaster, as opposed to us. And friend of his. She's a huge phenomenon, Elizabeth Day, isn't she? But she did a really good job because she was funny and he was on good form. And the show, which is called Tucci in Italy, coming soon to Disney Plus, is kind of like really interesting about Italian society and not just the food, but through
Did you get any food?
They had special Tucci in Italy themed nibbles. Before, the best of which were a pea quiche, pea and like something spinach maybe.
I thought you'd turn your nose up at that.
Why?
I don't know.
This is classic. You often, listeners, Kay, I should reveal, I'm not sure if I've mentioned this before. Kay often likes to anticipate what I'm going to say or think about something in advance of me actually saying what I think about something. So the fact that you might, I would turn my nose up, a pea quiche created in honor of Stanley Tucci. It was delicious.
I'm going to add that to my notes of things that you like. Yeah, okay, fine.
It was absolutely delicious. Yeah. Oh, yeah, no, I like a good quiche. I don't know about you, James.
I love a quiche. Yeah. But then when I have a quiche, I smother it in, and this is absolutely true. Whenever I have a quiche, I will get a quiche, higgity quiche, whatever other quiches are available.
Fancy.
Cut it in half.
Fancy schmancy.
Cook the half of it, dump a tin of tinned spaghetti on top of it, and then grate a ton of grated cheese over the top of that.
That is the lunch of champions.
Saying?
No.
Yeah.
Oh, that, my God.
True story.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
Spaghetti hoops are fine as well, but, you know.
It's actual toddler behaviour.
The quiche and spaghetti.
Quiche.
That is so mad.
Tinned spaghetti and tons of grated cheese.
I'm not sure.
Consider me shook.
I'm not sure Stan Tucci would approve, by
maybe
the way.
Not.
No, that's not Tucci approved.
No.
That's not adult approved.
No. Exactly. Yeah, I've been having it for a while.
Yeah.
A while.
Yeah. While we're on people we've bumped into and seen...
Our new segment, yes.
I forgot to mention last week that I met this guy called Rob in the queue for the Marvel film.
Thunderbolts.
Yes. Like, I always forget the name of. I cannot remember the name.
Thunderbolts.
Yeah. Mm. So he's in the queue to get into the premiere. This lovely guy called Rob said, are you Boyd Hill? And I was like, yeah. He goes, I love the podcast. He's a big fan of the podcast, listens to it.
How do you know he meant this one and not the Arsenal one?
Oh, that's a good point.
Made it quite clear that this one. he works for View Cinemas.
All right.
So, yeah, so he's proper film dude. And big shout out to Rob, yeah. He was very nice. There you go. I forgot to do it last week and I resolved to do it this week.
Thanks, Rob.
This is the new section, Listeners in the Wild.
Yes.
Listeners in the Wild. Yes, yeah. That's good. If you are a Pilot TV listener and you want to like harass Boyd on the street, you should do that.
Go for it.
Feel free. Okay, should we talk about what we've been watching? I'm going to look at Kay.
So the main thing I've been watching this week is Flintoff on Disney, which is the documentary about Andrew Flintoff, aka Freddy. And I was a fan before, but I didn't think it was possible, but I love him even more having watched it because it kind of covers off his extraordinary cricket career and then his post-retirement transition into TV and then also goes into... and. You know, this is a large part of it, the awful car crash he had while filming Top Gear and the effect of his injuries and how he's still traumatised by it. And it's I just found it extraordinary because, first of all, I mean, just I forgot what an amazing sportsman he was back in the day. And also, he's just an all-round entertainer and such a great guy, as proven by all the testimonials he had from, like, Michael Vaughan and James Corden, Jack Whitehall, etc. But just seeing his resilience, you know, through the crash and trying to rehabilitate and come to terms with his facial scars and injuries. Yeah, I thought it was so good. I thought it was really brave of him to do it and open up about it. He's done something similar when he talked about his bulimia. I don't know if either of you watched that. That show, and
did they decide to make this documentary after the crash, after the incident?
They made it, I think, during, because he went off the radar, you know, he had the crash and then he just became very reclusive.
Yeah.
And it was during that period of time he decided to document it. And because he said the thing that was most hard was the speculation.
Yes.
And so he wanted to just put his side across and, you know, yeah. Mm. But it's so sort of like moving and inspiring. Mm. Oh, I just love him. Yeah. So that's what I've been watching.
Flintoff.
Mm.
Boydie.
I've been watching Race Across the World. It's Race Across the World time, James. You'll be pleased to know.
And we're still not on it.
What do you mean?
He thinks
we should go on.
We wanted to be on Celebrity Race Across the World.
Okay, first of all, we're not celebrities, right? That's an insight into James' brain.
Exactly.
I think you two should do it, though, together.
Yeah, well, you have to apply.
We are a three. Okay.
Platonic
thruples,
I like to call us.
Thruples
on.
It's duos.
They'd make an exception.
I'm quite small. You could put me in a backpack.
We could. You could fit around the hand luggage.
Maybe. Mm. Yeah,
with their holes, obs.
Yeah. Anyway, every this is the fifth series now. Of the non-celebrity version. There's a celebrity version as well. I think there have been two celebrity series. And every year you think, how they're going to top the previous year's cast people, because they find really interesting. Do you remember there was the two young guys who I think won it last year, you know, who kind of like were really
best
fun.
Best mates,
and they were really sweet and everything. But they've done it again. Have you watched it yet?
Okay. Not yet.
Kay's a fan.
Yeah.
Kay was a fan of the show. She's now been a bit tardy.
Listen, this Freddie Flintoff documentary wouldn't watch itself.
Yeah, it's going to free lunches with Agatha Christie, I think. It's probably more where things are going wrong.
I'm going to catch up.
Yeah, quaffing champagne at the, was it Savoy? Or
Claridge's.
Claridge's.
Tea with fake Agatha Christie.
Exactly.
I would feel bad for you if you hadn't hung out with Tucci. Do you know what I mean?
I did hang out with him. It was just
you ridiculous human being.
Steady.
Anyway, carry on.
Let's not get a bitter and twisted.
Tucci.
Well done.
Oh my God, what was that? the duos in this are brilliantly cast again. There, for example, there's a woman and her ex-husband.
What?
Yes, who are doing it together. And she's really funny. She reminds me a bit of Julia Davis from Nighty Night. She's just got the way she speaks. If people have that in their mind when they're listening to her, she reminds me of her. And she's quite funny. She takes the piss out of her ex-husband, who she's with, quite a lot. And he kind of mostly sees the whole thing as like a therapy session.
Is he still in love with her, do you think?
I think so, a little bit.
No.
Yeah. Then there's a young teenage couple called Finn and Sionet, who are from Wales. And they are very very entertaining, and they're 17 and 18, and they've been together since they were like 14, and they're very, very, they're very Welsh, and she says stuff like, "Oh, China's much bigger than Wales," and things like that. And she's
really, that is factually accurate.
She's really funny, but I think the stars of the show are Caroline and Tom. He is a young guy. I think he's like maybe late teens, early 20s, and he's traveling with his mom. I think the mother-son partnership.
Do you remember
really
two series
good.
Ago?
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's got that flavour to it a bit. These guys are posher. He's quite a posh boy. Like, I think he's a posh rugby boy.
Has he got a signet ring? That's my telltale sign.
Oh, I don't know. I'm double checked that. He's got like, you know, ropes, what are they called? String tied around his...
The friendship bracelets.
All those things. And he's definitely got that.
Oh,
like,
my God.
Ropes. He's got ropes, no strings.
He hasn't got rope.
He's got bracelets.
He's got bits of string wrapped
around. On the back of that, I've just decided I'm going to make us a pilot friendship bracelet for us all to wear with the colours from our logo. Just let you know.
Do you know what? That's a really good idea. Yeah. A Taylor Swiftian friendship bracelet. I like it.
Yeah. Well, now you've ruined it for me. But yeah, okay, cool.
Brilliant idea. They're both quite posh, and he's really sweet with her. He's quite patronising towards her. She's kind of like, she's really stressed out about the whole thing. She's in tears after about half an hour, and there's a big the two episodes will have gone out by the time this podcast comes out, and the third one will be this week on Wednesday nights, I think. But it's just brilliant. And the other thing is they're traveling from China. They start on the Great Wall of China, and they're traveling through China on bullet trains and stuff, Shanghai, and there's one bit of China. I mean I am no geographical expert, James. It might surprise you to know. But there's this massive, lavish, long beach resort in this poor city in China that's like an incredible, like, luxury beach. And there's a whole kind of city that's built on it. And the side, it's a really amazing
stuff. Have we got any listeners in China? Maybe that could be part of our tour.
I hope so.
Our world tour.
And then they go through Nepal and they end up in India, I think, or maybe the other way around, I'm not sure. It feels even more epic.
They end
the landscapes
in India,
and the cityscapes, you know, Shanghai is spectacular, obviously. It's just the format, you know, we've talked about before. I think a couple of weeks ago, I was asked what my favorite. When you're away, we did favorite reality formats. And this has got to be. It's such a brilliant. It works so well every time. It's the casting,
part travelogue, relationship study.
Yeah, and the challenges they have to do.
Yeah.
They have to work to earn their money and all of that. And what I was going to say was, we're on the people are watching it live will know this by now. So I hope, but basically, one or two couples are really behind. Yeah, and it's like embarrassing and borderline excruciating because so basically every episode you arrive at a stop, mm-hmm. And you have to try and
checkpoint.
And you get there if you get there first, you know that's if you get there last after a couple of weeks, then you get thrown out of the show basically. So it's a race against the time to get to the checkpoint. And as I say, there's at least one couple that are way behind.
That would be us as a trio, I've got to tell you.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. But so it's a fantastic show, and it's more than living up to its annual brilliance.
I can't wait to catch up.
I thought, Boydie, you were going to talk about The Assembly.
Oh, The Assembly's brilliant as well. Yeah, that's a good point.
Danny Dyer episode of The Assembly.
I still haven't seen that. I need to catch up.
The David Tennant episode is the one that's really moving. Have you watched the David Tennant episode?
I haven't watched any of them.
Oh, okay.
But Alex Godfrey in our office was talking about the Danny Dyer one, and he thinks it's magnificent.
It is.
It started with Michael Sheen last year. Do you remember it?
It was on BBC. Yeah. It weirdly moved to ITV. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it was a BBC one-off, neurodivergent people asking questions of celebrities. And they said they do it with Michael Sheen now, and it's moved to ITV commissioned the series, and they've got Danny Dyer. The first two were Danny Dyer and David Tennant, and they're both brilliant so far, but David Tennant one is really moving because they sing this song, the Proclaimers song, and he's like, joins in, and then everyone there in the room starts singing and joining.
I'm going to cry.
Yeah, I guarantee you will cry. But yeah, that's a good point. This is one of many shows that I watch live on TV that I forget to mention in the slot. So I'm glad you brought it up, James.
Maybe you need to get a little jotter and write these things down.
Diego Jota, yeah, maybe. He's a Liverpool player, yeah.
Football bands.
By the way, that's what I meant to say. You referred to Arsenal, didn't you, in your intro?
I did,
What did you say?
I said you are still getting over their recent drubbing.
Drubbing? We lost 1-0.
Yeah.
1-0. That is not a fucking drubbing, all right?
Drubbing.
I'm impressed with your knowledge.
I meant to butt in at the time. I forgot because I got distracted by other things. But if, yeah, I like the fact that you're entering into the spirit of Arsenal knowledge, but yeah. Don't say drubbing.
Really? This time, so if I were to call up Joe Barton and ask him if...
This time next week, we play... The second leg is next Wednesday. We talked about the two-leg issue in Pilot Plus.
Yeah, I needed that explaining to me. It was very confusing. Yeah.
It was a pre-chat. It wasn't even on Pilot Plus. We couldn't subject
it. I can't remember where any of our conversations end up now. But this time next week, yeah, I'll know or not whether we've gone through, whether we've overcome that 1-0 deficit.
Keep us posted.
I will. If you lose next week, is that it?
Yeah.
Oh God, his mood's going to be unbearable.
If he's in a massive strop on next week's show, you'll know that there was another drubbing.
Very good. James, what have you been watching?
What have I been watching this week? Well, obviously, I watched Andor episodes 4-6, the second block of Andor, and... It's going from strength to strength.
But you'd already
it's incredible.
Watched it.
Of course I have, but I rewatched it for the spoiler special that we recorded earlier today, which will already be out there.
To take part in, Kate.
Well.
Yeah, even though I watch all of Andor.
Do you know what it is? It's a snub and a drop.
It's a total snub.
Well, boy, right here, right now, I might extend an invitation to you to join us.
Oh, my God.
To join us. Well, no, on the
Boyd,
Andor spoiler special.
I'm not sure if I'm available.
Boyd, as your agent, I'm not going to allow you. I mean, that is a pity invite.
It depends.
You don't want a pity invite. Okay, fine. Fine.
We'll see what the schedule is and, you know, what the payment is, etc.
Yeah, what the fee is.
There was some confusion among the listenership as to why Andor, which is, of course, a TV show, is on the Empire spoiler special feed and not on the Pilot Plus feed. The answer to that, and I know it's confusing.
I'm confused as well.
Is that we lost... Star Wars and Marvel to Empire in the divorce, and that's basically it. So Empire gets Star Wars and Marvel TV shows, and let's be honest, anything that Chris thinks that he likes, and we get everything else. So yes, the Andor spoiler specials are on the Empire spoiler special feed, and they are great.
Yes, I'll listen to this one. I listened to last week's one with Sophie Petzl, and
Sophie's back.
Oh, I saw her just earlier. Yeah,
you did. It was Sophie versus Empire's Ben Travis.
Oh wow,
battle
a
of the
mighty
titans.
Match.
Yeah, so it was a lot of fun. So rewatched those episodes as well. I also rewatched, I skimmed through all of the episodes of the third season of The Wheel of Time. Why, you ask? Well, because myself, the radiant Helen O'Hara, and fancy author C.L. Clarke, we all sat down together to pore over this.
Did C.L. Clarke write the original
she
book?
She did not write them. No, the Shrek. She's a fancy author, but she's a massive Robert Jordan fan.
Oh, okay.
So she joined us on the podcast. It was Robert Jordan who wrote the book, and she came on to talk to us about it. Robert Jordan is no longer with us, so he couldn't be on the podcast.
Okay.
But with AI. But with AI and the BBC.
You never know.
So we had a really good time. We spoke to showrunner Rafe Judkins. I say we, Helen did. But we did a big old spoiler special recording. It was great.
Let me tell you,
should listen to that spoiler special, Boyd. Do you know why? Because guess what? We unearthed the subtext from The Wheel of Time.
Oh, wow.
We found the subtext.
I'm glad you've located the subtext.
Yeah. I'm not going to tell you what it is, though. You've got to listen to it to find out.
Okay, that's good to know, yeah. I was talking to someone about Andor last night at the Stanley Tucci thing.
Was it Stanley Tucci?
It wasn't Stanley Tucci, no, it was someone else. But we're talking about how brilliant it is and that the best scene in it, and I forgot to mention this because I kicked off the review, I think, last week, because I wasn't on the spoiler special. I didn't get to talk about it. But the scene...
Yeah, we had it at Claridge's board, so you wouldn't have been
interested. Yeah, the scene where Carl Soller's character...
On the bed.
And that dinner with his mum.
Yes.
And Denise Goff's character.
Yeah.
You see, when I'm on the pilot, the podcast, the spoiler special, I will know their names. But that whole scene, dinner with the mother, is fucking brilliant.
That's wonderful.
One of the best scenes of the year in anything.
It's wonderful.
In anything at all.
And the way Dedra... Yeah. Well, you know, we can't really drop spoilers, but suffice to say, Dedra is a star in that
she
scene.
Is extraordinary
Denise Goff.
In that scene, yeah, it's brilliant. But his mum, who plays his mum?
You want to say Catherine Hunter?
Oh, yeah, I think you're right.
Is it Catherine Hunter?
I think you're right, yeah.
I think it is.
She is so funny as well. It is honestly...
Edie
Khan.
That
scene is like a hilarious... dramatic, cuckoo thing that will be brilliant in any context. In any context, it's a brilliantly written and acted, surprising scene. The fact that it's in the middle of this Star Wars epic thing is so kind of weird in a way, but it's worked
and
so
you
well.
You know the Kyle on the bed thing.
Yeah,
she didn't know he'd done that.
Yeah. I read about that. Yeah, he improvised that.
He improvised it, and because it was off camera, she didn't see what had happened.
That's
and
so good.
She was like, "It's genius." When she saw it,
that's so good.
He is everyone in that scene.
Yeah, he really is. Yeah,
fantastic Andor, which is magnificent. What else have I watched this week? I also watched The Walking Dead: Dead City, which is the Negan spin-off show from The Walking Dead, which isn't, I mean, that's not airing for quite a while. But the reason I did it is because I interviewed Jeffrey Dean Morgan, Negan himself, and Scott Gimple, The Walking Dead majordomo, last week. So we chatted all things Negan, which will be on a later episode of this podcast.
Is it full of zombies?
It is full of zombies. There are zombies all over the shop.
Fine.
Yeah.
While we're talking about guests, actually, I'm interviewing Russell T. Davis, hopefully on Tuesday next week. So if any listeners have any questions for him, maybe they want to let us know.
Okay. If you've got Doctor Who questions. Yeah. So you were doing on Tuesday. That's tomorrow. You're doing it tomorrow.
Yes.
Yeah.
As this goes out. So if you've got any Doctor Who, Russell T. Davis questions, please do send them. I'm going to say, do you know what?
At Boyd.
Send them to Boydie. Send them directly to at Boyd Hilton. That's probably the best way
to do it. I need to litter the brand spanking new email.
Oh, gosh. The inbox, which I'm so excited about.
So Kay has access now to the inbox, which is pilottv@empiremagazine.com. So all communications, apart from the ones for Boydie, should go to that mailbox now if you want them read out on the show.
Yeah, should we? Actually, did you just read out the... you read it, didn't you?
I said the address, yes.
Good.
See, Kay listens like...
Sorry, because...
Mind like a steel trap, always paying attention.
Oh, my God.
Pot, kettle.
How very dare you. Yep. That is rich. No, that's the reason why I was distracted, actually, is because I was opening the inbox to try and get the address.
Yeah.
You cheeky... You know what?
PilotTV@empiremagazine.com.
You cheeky bastard.
Oh, everyone's Tucci today. Look, speaking of which, we should go on to the listener question.
Yes, right. Well, we have a message from Sarah who says, "Hi Kay, a possible discussion topic for when James is back from his holiday. When recently reviewing The Amateur on the Empire podcast, James commented that he had never before seen weaponized daffodils. As people who respect soaps as an art form, I have no doubt that you and Boyd have seen daffodils used as a weapon before and can educate him on a classic TV moment, Dirty Den's assassination on the towpath, right?
What?
Yep. And then she continues and says, I think you've discussed your favourite TV deaths on the pod before, but I'd be interested in your thoughts specifically on the best deaths in soaps. James having to listen to this without being able to contribute can be his punishment for the original egregious oversight. Thanks for all the excellent work, Sarah." So I sent this separately to Boyd so he could prepare as well.
Okay.
Yeah. Boyd,
best
you can go first.
Soap deaths.
Richard Hillman.
Ooh.
Coronation Street. Remember?
Yeah.
Coronation Street killer, Richard Hillman.
Was that with the tram?
I think, I think so. Yeah. And then there was a later tram kind of crash as well, wasn't there?
Tramgate,
yeah. But I remember his death quite well. That's the one that sticks out to me.
Okay.
Than any others.
Well, I'm going to do a run through of mine then.
Oh, go on then.
I've got three.
Oh, you've poked up because it's a soap question. All of a sudden.
No, because... well, mine are all EastEnders related obs. And I realise they're all Mitchell related. So, Boydo, do you remember Jamie Mitchell, aka Jack Ryder, meeting his maker on Christmas Day 2002? So that was when he was run over by Martin Fowler in a car accident and died of his injuries, and it was devastating. Poor Sonia was in bits. Then Peggy Mitchell, 2016, she had terminal cancer and she wanted to die on her own terms. So they did this really emotional storyline where she took an overdose.
Yeah, that was good.
And when she hallucinated, she imagined Pat Butcher, her frenemy, who came and reassured her, which was very touching. And then finally, and more recently, actually, Lola Mitchell's death in 2023, a couple of years ago. And Lola had been diagnosed with a brain tumour and then been told it was terminal. And we basically saw her rapid deterioration and her friends and family basically just waiting helplessly as, you know, they waited for her to be taken from them. And it was honestly devastating. I was constantly crying, had a crying headache. But it was really well done and really well acted, actually, by Danielle Harold and Jamie Borthwick in particular.
Went a bit grim. There.
Well, it is a question about death.
I mean,
I don't know what you want to say.
Really dark, really
are you saying this section just died?
I mean, Richard Hillman. By the way, I've just checked Richard Hillman. He drove his car into the canal.
Oh right.
Yes.
Who died by the tram?
There was a separate tram crash scene.
It was really old. Yeah. The tram. Okay, I'm going to look that up while we continue.
They're more fun. I think Richard Hillman's death is more fun than the ones you mentioned. Coronation Street generally more fun than EastEnders.
Wait, he drove into a canal?
Yeah, he was a killer. He deserved it.
Oh, okay,
fine.
You
guys comeuppance.
All right, okay. So that's the end of the
Wow.
section.
Well, what if I had something to contribute?
That's why, do you know what? He never listens to us anyway, but I saw his hands moving, so he's obviously doing a Google so he can
I did have a Google.
Go on.
To try and see if there's anything that, because I do not watch soaps and have not for many, many years. But I do remember sort of like late 80s Neighbours. And while this isn't late 80s Neighbours, Helen Daniels, when she dies in Neighbours, so I do know about this. So when she died, she dies sort of naturally in bed, surrounded by friends and family, after having watched a video of Scott and Charlotte. Charlene's wedding, which was 10 years before, this is in 97. But what was awful is that Anne Haddie, who played Helen Daniels, she died. Like she was very ill. And when the episode aired in the UK, I think she either died then or had died at that point. The actual actor had died. So yeah. So that's while I didn't watch that episode because I'd long since stopped watching Neighbours, I did watch the Scott and Charlene wedding sequence. And also, do you remember when Helen Daniels gets kidnapped? Do you remember this? And kept in a shed.
I didn't watch
this. This was a storyline from the
80s. How dare they put Helen Daniels in the shed?
How dare they? Nobody puts Helen Daniels in the shed.
Unbelievable. While you were just mentioning that, I did Google who died by tram.
Oh.
And it was really old. It was in 1989, December, Alan Bradley.
Oh, that's right.
He was killed by a Blackpool tram, no doubt.
Yes, and he was he was a wrong'un.
I think that's right.
Yeah, that was a really funny scene. Yeah, see, that's what I'm more into, you know, entertaining death scenes. If we were doing, if we, you know, including what they used to be called soaps, actually, like Dallas and Dynasty. You know.
Oh, I used to watch those.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
so J.R. Ewing.
Yeah.
Who shot J.R.? Right, that was massive, a whole thing.
Huge.
That was massive.
Was it Cliff? I can't remember.
No, it wasn't. What's her name?
I don't remember.
Oh, it was.
I remember who shot Mr. Burns, but I don't remember who shot JR.
Oh, what's her name? Now I'm going to have to look up now, aren't I?
But another death, Bobby Ewing.
Yes.
Great death.
Exactly.
Because they fucking undid it.
Yeah.
And it was all a dream.
It was all a dream, yeah, in the shower.
And he was in the shower.
Kristen Shepherd shot JR.
Okay.
She was a good character. Yeah. That was in the days when they used to show Dallas and Dynasty, like prime time, 9 o'clock, Wednesday night.
Loved it. I used to love it.
Yeah, massive.
Did you watch The Colbys as well?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Didn't the
Falcon Crest?
Yeah, all of them. Didn't the Colbys have a UFO landing storyline?
Oh, really? this rings a bell.
So. I'm pretty sure, yeah.
Do you remember Baywatch Nights?
Yeah.
Because you had Baywatch.
Was it saucy? Yeah.
No, well, so the thing is, like, so Baywatch was essentially bucks and women running in slow motion on a beach, right? That was the show. There was nothing more to it.
Yeah.
Baywatch Nights was like the fucking X-Files. Like, it was like Baywatch if, like, the supernatural was real. And it was just, I don't understand what cocaine-fueled writer's room gave birth to that show.
Well, you're disappointed. You just think, I only tuned in for the swimsuits.
Right. And I was like, why are there aliens and ghosts and goblins?
You just saw Pamela Anderson.
It's baffling.
Give us Pammy.
Absolutely baffling.
Yeah.
That's it.
Have we answered the question?
Yes, we have.
I think we've answered the question. Okay,
we have
brilliant.
We've bummed everyone out with our death chat, so let's move on.
It's a bum out.
It's a what?
Please, for the love of God, no bum out here. Thanks.
Oh, God. Right, okay, if you want to send in your question for this podcast, or indeed for Violet Plus, then do send them in to pilottv@empiremagazine.com, which Kay now has access to.
I love it. I'm so excited by it. Yeah.
Shall we have news? What's happening in the world of news?
Yes. Kay, tell us news. Oh, I look something.
I will kick off if you like.
Oh, wow.
No, Kay, you do have something.
Well, first of all, I was going to tell you that Shogun Series 2 has got a production date.
Literally what I was going to start with. Yes.
You carry on.
It's
go on.
January next year.
Yeah. But still, actually, you know, wait a minute. Sorry.
So they're starting filming January next year.
Starting filming.
Oh my God, so we're not going to see it until like 2027.
Because bear in mind, they've been in production since the first season aired.
Oh,
like
Jesus.
When I spoke to Marks and Kondo about it, they were already...
Clang.
Yeah, there we go. They were already, like, they were writing scripts, they were on it. But yeah, they're not starting shooting until January 2026, which means, are we going to get it in 2026? I doubt it. So we're probably looking at 2027 for season two of Shogun, which is a bit upsetting.
Do you think the podcast will still be going by then?
Who knows?
Who
knows?
Murder each other poorly. Then.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a long time to wait, but it'll be worth the wait. We know that.
And I believe they're shooting again in Canada.
Yes,
so
they
it's
are
not
Vancouver.
Like they haven't relocated to actual Japan.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
Do you remember we got some angry messages about that when we were originally talking about Shogun?
Oh, that's right. Yeah. They don't want to know that it doesn't shoot in Japan. It's like it's a shooting location. It's fine.
Will you agree now that when it's on TV, you're not going to talk about the subtitles again?
Absolutely not.
Oh,
under no circumstances. That's 100% going to be the first thing I talk about if Disney Plus haven't sorted their act out, which they absolutely won't have done.
Okay. A trailer's dropped for The Better Sister, which will star Jessica Biel and Elizabeth Banks, and they're going to play a strange sister sisters, who basically, one leads, Jessica Biel's character leads a really amazing life with a lawyer husband and a teenage son, and the other is struggling to stay clean. And basically, these two sisters have to come together when Chloe, Biel's character's husband, is murdered. The twist in the tale is basically that the other sister is actually the husband's ex. Do you get it?
Kind of. I'm following
Jessica
from a distance.
Jessica Biel's husband is the other sister's ex.
I see.
Yes.
Right.
And the biological mother of Jessica Biel's son. So, I mean, I was saying...
He's the biological mother of Jessica Biel's son. No, you have lost me now.
The sister is the biological mother of Biel's son.
It's a tangled, yeah. Shall we say, familial web.
Yes, they're a very close family.
Very close.
Anyway, so when they find out that Jessica Biel's husband has been murdered, the two sisters have to come together because there's a lot of media attention. And, yeah, so...
Is it a good trailer?
It is, yeah. I was intrigued.
I have not seen it. But okay. Yeah. I see where you're going. There was also a trailer for Dexter Resurrection. I don't know if you can call it a trailer. It's barely even a teaser. It's just Michael C. Hall.
Oh,
that's
okay.
Basically it.
Doing
and
what?
It plays the Dexter music, and he looks Dextery, and that's it. Hmm. So it's the teasiest of teasers. So it's not going to reveal a great deal about it. But you know that is still incoming, and it also did give us a date for Dexter, at least in the US, and that is July 11th, 2025.
Okay. Now, do you remember when I had that weekend and I got lost in Bergerac? The new reboot.
Yeah.
Well, I'm very excited to say that it's been announced that it will be coming back for a new series in 2026. So it's a big year, 2026. Shogun and Bergerac.
Yes.
Why are you laughing?
Those are the two pillars of the year.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was really good. You should have watched it. Damon Maloney. Anyway, so yeah, that'll be coming to UN Drama in 2026.
Oh.
Mm.
The news that I'm most excited about in the world of TV this week is that the BBC have announced their plans for the 40th anniversary of Live Aid.
Mm.
Yes. And clearly, the Live Aid had a massive impact on both of you.
No, it did, but I just, yeah.
Yeah.
What are they going to do to celebrate?
Well, they've commissioned a documentary series in which, with all the main players involved, we'll talk about the whole experience of it, how it came about, Bob Geldof, Bono, Sting, etc. George Bush is involved, apparently, talking about, and the president of Nigeria, etc. And it's going to be a kind of four-part, in-depth, the most in-depth look at the whole phenomenon of Live Aid ever. But the most exciting thing of all is, because they've never, ever repeated Live Aid since it went out, like, in full. You know, remember it had, I think it was something like 12 hours in the UK, or 6 hours in the UK, and then it had the American concert, which is in Philadelphia, mm-hmm. and they kind of went from one to the other. And it was an extraordinary... And remember things like the Queen, you know, the ending of the Queen film, Bohemian Rhapsody, was all about their appearance at Live Aid. It totally resurrected their career, Queen, and it turned them into, like, superstars because they were so amazing that day. And U2, it was the making of U2 because they were an incredible film as well. And there were less successful performances, by the way, by various other superstars as well. But... what I'm excited about is they're going to show 6.5 hours of the original concert.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, in full on the BBC. And that is really, really exciting because they've never showed anywhere like that amount before. And I think just to see it, kind of presumably they'll have to like remaster it. I don't know, you know, put it in HD. Because in the clips that I've seen in the past, like, you can watch some of it on YouTube.
Yeah, how's that going to work? Because presumably it's in like standard definition 4:3 format.
I don't know how it's going to work.
AI is going to do it. Agatha Christie's going to turn up and introduce it.
Yeah, exactly. And so I just can't wait to see.
Do you think David Hepworth will be involved?
Well, that's a very good question, Kay, because David Hepworth and Mark Ellen, both formerly of certainly Heath's Parish, and formerly when EMAP was EMAP, before it became Bauer Media now, where they both worked on Q and Empire and Heat. They were the presenters of Live Aid for the BBC, and David Hepworth was the one who was sat alongside Bob Geldof, as he said, he didn't say give us your fucking money, he said give us your money fucking hell, or something like that. He used the F word in the middle of asking people to send their money, and he was there next to him backstage presenting the show. So yeah, I'm assuming that they both, or one, or at least one or both of them will be involved, yeah. So yeah, that's incredibly exciting for me personally. Don't care about anyone else.
That's Boydie's news. Yeah. Did you know, or do you care, that Desperate Housewives is getting a reboot with Kerry Washington?
I said this.
I perked up with the name with Kerry Washington mentioned.
Yeah, she's good. But I said this a while ago. I can't believe they haven't already rebooted it, Desperate Housewives. It seems like such an obvious thing to do.
Because it was a big deal at the time.
It was a massive deal. Yeah. It was the same year as Lost.
Yes.
Do you remember?
But it's not remembered in the same breath. Like, it's of these things where it was massive, but it's largely
forgotten.
Didn't it go
on too long?
It kind of fizzled out. The thing about it to start with was, like Lost, the incredible thing was it was an ABC primetime show, and it was quite raunchy. Not as much as they could get away with on a network primetime show. It was quite kind of bold and daring, and as I say, raunchy for its time. And the subject matter was quite. There'd never been anything like it, really. So its uniqueness and its kind of adult content within the as far as you could go within a network show that made it kind of historic and different. And the cast was great, but it did fizzle out. I think after a couple of seasons, I think it dipped and went downhill quite quickly. Is my memory of it.
I'm interested in a trip down Wisteria Lane again, though.
Yeah, it's such a good IP.
Mm. Wow.
Why not?
Wow, you've made it sexy, Boyd.
Yeah. Why not resurrect the bloody thing?
Here's some news. The Bear, and when it will air.
Tell me.
The Bear, season 4, June the 15th.
Ooh.
In the US. I think it's going to be day and date here as well.
James.
But it's definitely in the US.
Isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is day and date.
Don't be a commie tease.
Sorry. Yeah. But that's exciting. Psyched about that?
Bareback.
Steady.
The bear is back. Yes, Kay. We can confirm that.
Sorry.
You've had far too much caffeine today. Okay, is there any other news?
No,
there is no more news. So we're going to move on now to this week's reviews. And first up this week, we have The Four Seasons on Netflix. This is adapted from the 1981 Alan Alda film of the same name. And it has a stacked cast, which includes Tina Fey, Steve Carell, and Colman Domingo. And this is a group of three couples who kind of have this habit of taking quarterly getaways together, only for one of the pairings to announce they're getting divorced and the kind of ripples that spread out from there. To talk about The Four Seasons, we turn to a man who will stay in nothing less than a Four Seasons. Is Boyd Hilton.
Very good.
Oh, I'm glad you liked it, Kate.
Bravo, James.
Bravo. James, oh my God. I just looked at him
and I'm
not sure I've ever seen such a smug, even for James. I hope this video goes out.
I think we should have a smugometer because have been other competing
this
moments.
This could be one of the smuggest. not just of James, of any human being ever in history.
Wow, that's quite a claim.
It's fair. It was a good one.
It was a good one, yeah. To be fair.
Credit where it's due.
This is, The Four Seasons. As you said in your wonderful intro, the 1981 film with Alan Alda is one of my favourite films.
Here we go. It's another one.
Don't be ridiculous. You say this every week.
It's in the top 50.
You always go, this is the best film.
But I love it.
Every single film you have seen is one of your favourite films.
When I was growing up, yeah. So I saw this, I was working at 67, 77, I must have been 14, and my parents took me to see it. We all went to see it, I think, as a family, and it was a really, really memorable experience for me watching the film. And they've kind of retained, and it was forgotten about, I think, for a long time. It was not one of those
films.
It did well at the time, yeah. It did. It was definitely acclaimed and did well. And Alan Alda was fresh from the star of MASH, the TV series version of MASH. And I think it was the first film he wrote and directed and starred in, and he did a really good job. And it had like a starry cast for the time. And it explored these marriages, these interrelationships. And I was surprised, and it's quite, again, like I was saying about Desperate Housewives in the news section, it makes total sense to reboot certain things. And you're like, yeah, of course, why wouldn't you reboot Desperate Housewives? And in the case of The Four Seasons, similarly, you think, why wouldn't you? Because it's got a kind of format to it, even though it was a film, whereby, a quarter of each bit of the film was a different vacation in which all the married couples gathered across the Four Seasons, literally, while the Vivaldi soundtrack of the Four Seasons played in the background. So why wouldn't you update that and do it again? I think I really enjoyed it. I think they've done a really good job. It's created by Tina Fey along with Lang Fisher and Tracy Wigfield. You've got Tina Fey and Steve Carell. And Steve Carell, the thing that kind of drives the story early on is that he secretly wants to get divorced from his wife, but is too scared/too what's the word I'm looking for? Can't do with confrontation. Mm-hmm. And so he's kind of putting it off. So all the friends are gathering, and he tells the blokes that he's with that he wants to split from her, and they're varying degrees of shock and disgust. And then their various partners find out, and everyone knows
that
he wants to split from his wife, apart from his wife, who's like busy making arrangements for his birthday celebrations.
Played by Kerry Kenny Silver,
who's really good. And meanwhile, you've got Carmen Domingo and Marco Calvani as a gay couple who are husbands, and they have an open marriage. And they're kind of, and I thought the depiction of them was really clever and convincing. And I thought it totally made sense, and it was a totally kind of authentic exploration of that. And you've got Will Forte, who's married to Tina Fey's character. And I just think, I really enjoyed it. Bottom line, I think they've done it's quite laid back. I mean, it's not forced. I wouldn't say it was gentle, because it's, you know, you've got the kind of quite pithy, sharp depiction of certain relationships. It doesn't soft soap the fact that, you know, people just stay together for years and years, sometimes even decades, just because it's the easiest thing to do. And that's one of the ideas that runs through the film as well, and I think it runs through this whole series. I just think it's done, the tone of it, I really like the tone of it. It's not silly comedy. It's a kind of quite gentle comedy. It's not forced. The comedy is coming out of the characters and the situations and the secrets and lies.
It feels grounded,
thank you. And the secrets and lies within each relationship. So I really enjoyed it. And I mean, you know, what's not to love about a comedy drama with Tina Fey, Steve Carell, Carmen Domingo and Will Forte? Nothing, as far as I'm concerned.
Wow. Okay.
So I really enjoy this. I actually have written gently. I think it's gently funny, because when we went to the Up Next event, they showed a clip of this. I don't know if you guys had gone. Oh, right, okay.
It's the bit with the crackers.
Yeah, and I have to say, I didn't find it funny. And I was like really nervous about this, because obviously Tina Fey, legend. And I thought, oh my God, I wonder what it's going to be like. But actually what I've realised, it's not a all-out comedy. It's a comedy drama. And actually it makes sense, you know, in the context of the whole show. I thought they did it really well in terms of that, the tone, as you say. And I really liked it for all the reasons that you said, in that, you know, it kind of explores these different, it immediately establishes the dynamics between the friends, the couples, the individual relationships. And, you know, I'm just always fascinated by the relationship dramas. So, yeah, I really liked it. I thought it was good.
I did not particularly enjoy it.
Why not? I'm afraid.
I didn't find it very funny. And I found it difficult.
Yeah, but it's gently funny, right?
Is it? Amazing. It's gently tries to be funny, certainly. Ooh. But I didn't find it funny. And I just didn't really care a lot about what was happening. I wasn't invested in their relationship. Weirdly, obviously a lot of drama comes from the fact that it's the Steve Carell relationship that's breaking up. I was like, yeah, okay, fine. Carmen Domingo's relationship was the only one that
James.
I really got invested in, because he's got his health issues and he's lying to his husband. Like that one, I thought, I'm interested in this relationship. But I found the others a little unconvincing.
Really?
I've got to be honest with you.
I'm really surprised, because I thought they were very, they were very grounded in reality. And I'm so surprised that you didn't feel bad for the wife of Steve Carell.
Oh, no, it's not, but I think
And you weren't
partly,
invested in that way.
Like, I found,
she's a heartless boss.
Perhaps that. But I found it drawn in it. Perhaps it is the comedy drama thing. I found the characterization drawn more from comedy than from drama. And she didn't ring true to me. Like, she felt quite caricatured to me. And I didn't, you know, so I couldn't get invested in it, because I didn't really believe in her. So, and I think really that undermined the whole thing. I will say, it's beautifully shot. It's very cinematic, to the point where I felt like I was watching a film, like genuinely all the way through it. And I had to, and perhaps it's just because it's Steve Carell and Tina Fey, but, and they've done a number of films together, but I was like, I kept having to remind myself it was a TV show and it wasn't going to be 90 minutes and then out.
I sort of do know what you mean about the wife character, actually.
Yeah, and so I just
like Steve Carell's character. I think he's good.
But I think there are women like her. I think she's, I recognise that. That character, I thought she was really well drawn and really well. That was an interesting observation of the type of character. And there's a similar character in the original film.
Oh, okay.
That made sense to me. Funny enough, the thing that I will compare it to, just because I was going to say, I've had quite a few messages, I'm sure you've had a few messages in the mailbox that we might get to in the next Pilot Plus, slagging me off for not liking Étoile.
Right. We haven't had a lot of... Have you had a couple,
not exaggerating.
You stirred up the ballet hive, Whitey.
One or two. In fact, they were very civil. They were very civil messages. A couple of people said I should...
As befitting the ballet.
Indeed. There are a couple of saying, we both said, James and I both said we weren't going to carry on watching it. I was more harsh about it, I think, the new version.
You were mega harsh.
I was harsh. But
you were
just
out of control, in fact.
Yeah, you were off the chain.
Wow. Luckily, the correspondents weren't quite so damning. They were more like, you should carry on watching because it actually gets better, they were saying. I don't know how much of it you watched because you liked it, didn't you? How many episodes did you watch of Étoile? You remember?
I watched two, I think, or three.
Okay. Yeah. Well, apparently it gets better. And I think maybe if you ease yourself into the tone. But if you compare, I think that is a comedy drama, and this is a comedy drama. But there's something about the kind of tissue of this, if you like, that I went along with much more than I did with Étoile.
Well, Étoile's very heightened, deliberate.
Étoile is more heightened. You're right. So that tonal difference between the two, I preferred this to the more heightened Étoile. Although I will, because people have specifically told me to go back and watch
more. Good.
When I have to
open your mind, Boyd.
Yeah.
Actually, while we're on the Étoile front, can I just tell you that because I am monitoring the inbox. We've just had an email through from Beth who said...
This is live email correspondence. Wow. This is a first.
I know. She's drunk on the power of having access to the mailbox.
I know.
Who says, I just found myself doing a James and correcting the podcast while listening. James said that Wednesday in French, because this is about... Yeah, and I remember at the time when he said it, I thought that's not right and I was going to correct
you. Did I call it Vendredi? What did I call it?
No. James said that Wednesday in French was dimanche, as we all know is Sunday.
Yeah, it is Sunday. Yeah.
And I said, even like funnier, I said miércoles, which is Spanish for Wednesday. And then she pointed out it's in fact... Mercredi,
that's the one. Oh. It's been a long time since I've done French.
Well, fortunately, she said she's still loving the podcast.
I know it's Mittwoch in German. So
okay, well, don't try and make up for it now. No, because it was a French show we were like talking about. But we both stand corrected.
We do. That was the Four Seasons, which I enjoyed less than you. Mm. But where is it showing, Boydie?
It's on the Netflix now.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, what else is that to
There's
say?
There's nothing else to say.
Now 2025.
Now in 2025.
Yeah, that's true. I should have said now in 2025. Yeah.
Next up this week, we have Poker Face. This is the long-awaited return of Rian Johnson's Poker Face, which is the investigative series that sees Natasha Lyonne's sort of human lie detector on the run from the mob, actually several mobs, while solving crimes as she goes. So the first episode of this second season, The Game is Afoot, guest stars Cynthia Erivo, as quadruplets in a murderous disagreement over a TV royalties inheritance. And here to talk about it is Kay Ribeiro. I'm Kay Ribeiro.
Oh, that's good. Today.
You're on fire. I think you stepped up your intros after I did a good intro when you were away. I think you felt the challenge.
Yeah.
You need to step it up.
I was like, Boyd is coming for me.
Yeah.
Do you know what next week you should do? You should do an intro or like a little bit using AI. See how well that does.
I'll get Agatha Christie to do the podcast.
In the style of James. See what it comes up with.
Oh, God help us.
Anyways, this series opens up with a very ambitious episode, as you say, because Cynthia plays herself, this character of different characters four times because she plays quads and quadruplets. And so Natasha Lyonne returns as Charlie Kale, and she is the casino worker who has the ability to immediately detect lies. And she's on the run from the mobster gangsters, as James says. And this time around, she's working on an apple farm, and she befriends... Now, is the character called Amber, the one who works on... I can't remember. Basically, she befriends a woman. They're looking at me blankly. She befriends a woman on the apple farm.
Played by Cynthia Erivo.
Yes.
Yeah.
Crucially, she's played by Cynthia Erivo, not Cynthia Erivo.
Yes, true.
Who has three sisters who... They all appeared in a teen drama together, managed by their momager
Kid
from
Cop.
Hell. Yes, managed by their momager from hell, Norma. So when Norma dies, she leaves all her money to another sister that they didn't realise they had.
Played by?
Cynthia. cue a murder, and Charlie basically having to figure out what the hell is going on. I mean, there were moments in this when I was unsure. I was like, wait a minute, who? What? I like the ambition of it, and it was kind of fun. So, I mean, there was a moment of clunky exposition, which I'll talk about after, like, we off-pod because I don't want to ruin it. But, yeah, overall, I enjoyed it. I thought it was fun.
Did you watch all of season one of Poker Face?
No, do you remember? I wasn't as much of a fan as you guys. You loved it, and I watched...
Did you watch all of season one, Boydie?
Yes.
You did?
Yes.
Okay. What did you think of season two?
I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a fabulously witty and entertaining start to the new season. I like the fact that... Natasha Lyonne's character is constantly being shot at wherever she goes, and that then he cut from like he just dropped in like three or four different sequences where she's just being shot at by the various people that are after her. I loved the conceit of the various sisters, all played by Cynthia Erivo in various accents. One of them is in a French Canadian accent for reasons. I thought it was one of the funniest ones. I thought it was one of the flat out funniest episodes so far. And very much lent into, to use that annoying phrase, the comedy of the show. Because Natasha Lyonne's comedy timing is brilliant. So I really enjoyed it. I thought, and Cynthia Erivo, as the various multitude of sisters, was hilarious and funny. And the mother character was fantastic, who is the victim in it. It's just, and I think it felt, Rian Johnson directed this one.
He did.
He didn't write
this
one.
Written by Laura Dealey.
Yeah. Mm. But I thought it felt as cinematic as, I think there's a boundary he doesn't want to cross. He doesn't want to make it too lavish and almost overly cinematic, because of course part of the whole point of it is it's a return to the Columbo style TV classics of old. Of course, Columbo was directed by Steven Spielberg in one of the episodes.
What?
Yes, famously.
Oh.
Okay, famously. But it was never like a particularly massively cinematic show. You know, it's not like, you know, it wasn't in the peak TV era. You're going back to the 70s, etc. So it would be a bit weird for this to go overly elaborate. And yet, there were little directorial flourishes I noticed that he brought in, and I just thought it was very, very well done. So I really enjoyed it. Yeah, it's kind of everything you like about Poker Face for me was summed up in this episode. Yeah, well, I get the sense that you didn't like it that much.
Well, my question is, I didn't watch the whole of season one.
Okay.
I watched like three or four episodes.
Yeah,
I don't remember the tone being like this.
Oh,
yeah. Like, it is,
because this is very, very silly. And comedy, yes. And I remember there being comedy. I remember it being funny. But this is very silly.
Yeah, do you know what? This episode was very, very, very silly. There was a little bit of silliness in series one.
Yeah.
But it wasn't as much as this. But yeah, you really liked
it. I did. I really liked it, even though I didn't press on with it. But that's partly because it's very, very, you know, it's very episodic.
Also, there's a West Wing exists.
Not quite. But I found like the tone in this, it was almost like Coen's-esque. You know when they do their screwball comedy stuff?
Yes.
Like, it had a lot of that in it. And I really struggled with the tone. Now, there's a specific bit in this where someone's being shot at. And that really rubbed me up the wrong way, because it was so knowingly stupid and unrealistic and just deeply, deeply silly.
Yeah.
And it happens quite early on, and that, honestly, they lost me at that point.
This is a show, though, where basically Natasha Lyonne's character can look at a person
and instantly tell they're lying.
Tell where they're lying.
It makes no sense.
It's a preposterous premise.
Yeah.
So you have to roll with it.
I know.
And it's not that tonally. It's not that tonally different from. As I said, when I was, I think it's one of the funniest ones, and it's setting out to be, I think, probably as funny, if not funnier, than most of the episodes.
It has. To be fair, the jokes are pretty good.
Yeah.
Like, it is funny.
And there were episodes that were pretty flat out funny in season one as well. So it's not that big a
I think
jump.
It's just because this is not how I remembered it. Maybe it's just because I watched the first few and I didn't watch them all.
Yeah.
But, and it's like, I actually enjoyed it. I actually had a good time watching the episode, but I was really looking forward to it, and I was thrown by that tonal issue a little bit. But what makes no sense is that I love the fucking Knives Out films, and they're deeply silly.
Exactly what I was about to say.
That's a good point.
This is on you.
I don't understand
a James
this
problem.
Inconsistency of tone is James. You are inconsistent of tone, not the thing.
Yeah,
not Rian Johnson.
You're right. Like,
Rian Johnson's maintaining the consistency of tone from those films, which feature an incredibly over the top performance by Daniel Craig in the ridiculous accent.
The accent.
Foul, please.
Exactly.
Oh, no.
And the second one in particular is completely completely ridiculous from start to finish. Yeah. And it's the same. It's a very similar tone.
I think it might have been, honestly, if you'd taken out the shooting scene that I'm referring to, I think I might have been
large on board. It did last for a few seconds.
I know. Yeah, that's
what
mad.
Can I tell you? It like, really, really annoyed me. This is all you.
Yeah.
This is no reflection on the show.
Perhaps
fans
not.
Of the show will lap this up. I guarantee, I'm telling you.
Yeah, this is a riot, this one.
It's a riot, exactly. I absolutely loved it. Yeah, it's great. And I think it pays tribute to Columbo and all those kinds of shows in such a kind of smart way. So it doesn't matter if you've never watched Columbo in your life, as I suspect Kay hasn't.
What? Are you kidding me? One more thing. Of course I have.
I'm all right, okay.
You're outrageous.
When I was talking about Steven Spielberg directly, you looked like I was going mad.
No, I didn't know that fact.
Oh, okay. I'm fine. Okay. Anyway, it pays tribute to them without being too slavish, and you don't have to have seen Columbo or any of those things to enjoy what this is doing. Mm. But nevertheless, it does stick to the formula of showing you, in quite an elaborate opening sequence, the murder and the build-up.
It's not a who-done-it, it's not a why-done-it, it's not a how-done-it, it's a will they catch them.
Exactly, And the way, the joy of it is in the way Natasha Lyonne gets involved in these cases, because again, the whole premise is idiotic.
It is,
everywhere she goes, there's a murder for her to solve. It's like, it's moronic. And the way she falls in with the Cynthia Erivo character, one of them, is so like, I don't know, it's kind of smooth. I thought there was like a kind of real like, oh, that's clever. You know, that she kind of falls in with her, but they become friends. And then she ends up solving the mystery.
Apples bring people together.
Exactly, apples bring people together. I just thought it was, he's so clever at these things. And I can't wait to see the rest of them.
Poker Face then, which is on Sky and Now.
Thursday, the 8th of May, 9 p.m, 2025.
Thank you, Boydie.
It's a weekly release. By the way, someone asked me earlier in the office today if it was going to be all together as one box set. No, you have to be patient. It'd be on weekly, as it is when it airs in the United States.
It's not a show you need to binge, let's be honest.
It's not, no.
Always be honest.
Finally this week, we have Series 2 of Malpractice on ITV. This is the medical anthology series from Grace Aforiata, which last season revolved around Neve Algar, but this season has Tom Hughes as a psychiatric registrar, Dr. James Ford, whose misdiagnosis of a patient leads to tragedy and a resulting malpractice investigation. Kay is in the pocket of big malpractice, having hosted a Q&A and taken money for it. So, Boydie. Mm-hmm.
I hosted season one.
Oh my God, everyone is in the pocket of big malpractice.
But I'm not in their big pocket okay. now. I'm not in
Kay's replaced you in their pocket.
Yeah,
so if anything, you've got an extra grind.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I haven't. No, it's fine. Spoiler alert, as in I'm about to say what I think of this right now rather than build up to it, which is why I prefer to do it in the review generally. I think it's excellent. And I really like the first series. Remember, this is effectively, it's from World Production. So this is, I think, the medical line of duty, basically. And I remember at the Q&A, the first series Q&A, Gemma Curio was there, and Grace, the writer, was talking about, you know, how he helped her, and you know, was a great encourager of her. And you can, and this feels like now that this could go on and on and on, because you could have the investigative team of Dr. George and Dr. Norma, played by Jordan Kuame and Helen Bean, respectively. They are the medical investigations unit, which, by the way, is fictional, isn't it? Doesn't exist.
AC12 for the NHS.
It's the AC12 for the NHS, exactly, but does not exist. It's a fictional creation of the
should
show.
Should exist.
Which should I'm sure there's kind of like similar bodies that do exist. But they make for a really good kind of investigative duo, and they bounce off each other really well. What's great about it is that it the first episode shows you this awful, awful thing that happens, this absolute tragedy. And you're like, it's so well done. It's so, and the first season was directed by Phil Barantini of Adolescence fame, and he did a brilliant job, as you'd expect of him to do, of making it feel real and visceral and all of that. But I think this time around, it still is just as visceral and real and authentic. And so it's, even though it's showing something that's really awful and tragic and horrendous, and then the subsequent investigation into all of that, it all feels plausible, and that it could have happened, and that things are complicated in these situations. And are the actions of Dr. James Ford, as played by Tom Hughes, you know, is there something that he's completely responsible for, or in fact, it's much more complicated than that. And almost the whole point of these things, of these series, of this show, as created by Grace Afori-Atta, who actually was a consultant psychiatrist in the NHS, so she knows what she's talking about, is that it's all much more complicated than it at first seems. And I think it dramatizes that particular idea so well. So you watch the first episode and you think, oh, so you know what it's all about? Well, obviously it's his fault. And then you're like, you watch the second episode, you're like, actually, it's more complicated than that. And there's other characters come in who have an effect on what happened that we don't know about in series one. And then as the third and fourth, I watch, you know, more episodes now, every episode complicates it more and more and more until you're like, oh, I'm not so sure how it's going to turn out now. So I think it's, as a kind of formula, it works really well, and the specifics of it work really well. I thought Tom Hughes is excellent. I think this is one of his, you know, I think he's a good actor. I've never been particularly like a massive fan.
Victoria?
Yeah, he was in Victoria. But he was perfectly good, but I thought he did a really, really good job of a guy who's in the NHS. He's doing, on one level, you know, a brilliant job, as in he's doing a job that needs to be done, that's really bleak and hard and difficult. And it's up to him to determine whether or not people are psychiatrically healthy enough to do various things, to give birth to their kids, etc. And he's juggling it's only episode two different things. One of his consultants wants him to do one thing, the other wants him to do another. He decides to do both of them in one night, which it turns out to be a disaster. But you can't blame him for it, or can you? I'm watching it going, you can't blame him for it. And you're constantly being reminded, and not in a unsubtle way, sledgehammer way, that this is what doctors face, particularly in the NHS, day in, day out. This is their life, dealing with this kind of shit.
Yes, and then the subsequent blame game of everyone trying to cover their backs, because
exactly. So I think it's an excellent show, and I'm really glad it's back. And I think this series seems to be just as good as the first one so far. I watched the ending, but I think it's brilliant.
Okay, what's the official line straight from ITV?
I really agree with everything Boyd said, and I think Tom Hughes is fantastic in this. He's so convincing. That's what I think. The word that I'd use for the whole thing is authentic, and that's because of Grace and her background, her medical background. It's World Productions, of course, as well. But all of them, they're just so, you know, they're at the top of their game, and you can tell. So you're so immersed in this. It's so stressful because it's so well-written and well-performed that I've got to do a public service announcement. It's traumatic to watch this first episode. Mm. And there's a couple of moments, but one in particular, and I've watched this first episode three times now, and it is equally distressing every time you watch it because it's so realistic. Mm. And do you know what? Even more so, the reason why I found it so traumatizing is because these things do happen, which I didn't realize.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what Grace wants to do. She wants to shed a light, first of all, on the Department of Psychiatry, because she says, you know, it's kind of the poorer relation of the other departments, but also just shed a light on the importance of mental health and mental health support, aftercare, and dispelling the stigma around it. So I hosted, so, you know, I'm biased, but I think it's fucking brilliant. And I've seen the second episode as well. And what I love about it is that obviously it's rooted in, you know, as we say, very rooted in reality. However, it is a thriller.
And
she pulls out the twists and the turns. And how many episodes have you watched?
Yeah, two as well.
Yeah, exactly. There's a brilliant thing that happens and you're like, what? I did not see that coming.
Well, it's also like, you know, I am comparing it to Line of Duty a lot, but I remember when I hosted the first series Q&A, they were very, absolutely embraced the comparison. It wasn't a thing they would shy away from. But you've also got one of these interview scenes as well, which are great, where the various, particularly he in the first episode, is being interrogated by the people from the medical investigations unit, and those scenes have a Line of Duty-esque, you know, kind of vibrancy and tension to them as people try and work out what they should and shouldn't say about what they're being investigated for.
Can I just give you a fact? Actually, you probably know this, obviously, but Helen Behan, who plays Dr. Norma Callahan, who works for the MIU, she's a trained nurse.
Oh, I think I did know that.
Incredible. Yeah.
Yeah, and Cillian Hisley's in it from Am I Being Unreasonable, of course.
Yeah, she's great in this.
She's very good. She's excellent. She's not nice, I would say.
No, she's in obstetrics and very much.
She's a fierce, she fiercely comes up against Tom Hughes' character, shall we say.
Yeah, and possibly a piece of work, we don't know.
Quite a piece of work.
Well, yes, because you're unclear as you're going quite where everyone sits on this. Mm. Because as you say,
that's
it's not cut and dry. But I think, you know, from the first episode, you're... you can see what's gone wrong here, but you can also see how it's gone wrong. Obviously, there's more to it, and you don't know everything, and different characters have different motivations and whatnot, but you see the pressure that he's under, the time constraints, he's being pulled in different directions. And I think the worst part of the tragedy when it happens is, A, it's traumatic, but it's so easily avoidable.
Yeah.
And it's just like, and the tragedy is how easily, if any one of 20 different things had been done just slightly differently, none of this would have happened. Mm-hmm. And that's what makes it really upsetting, because none of this needs to happen, so you have to deal with the aftermath of it. And with something like Line of Duty, the nature of criminality is there are people doing bad things. And the problem with this, or not the problem with this at all, the tragedy of this is he's not a villain. Like, this is not, these are people with good intentions who make mistakes. Mm-hmm. And it's, what are the repercussions of that? What are the, you know, what is the price they have to pay for the mistake they've made? Is it their fault? Is it not their fault? Even if it isn't their fault, do they need to be held to account because someone has to be blamed? Like, it's like the culture within the NHS, you know, the grief of people who've lost partners who want someone to be at fault.
Yeah, underfunding.
All of these things. And then just the tragedy of human error, and it's a really sad show. Yeah. But it's really, really good. Mm. It's really good.
I thought of you when I was watching it the second time around, because I was thinking, oh gosh, I wonder how James is going to cope, because I found it tough.
Yeah,
and I thought, I wondered how you'd get.
But it's very compelling, like really compelling.
I would more that James would bring up ITV and be biased against it.
It feels. I mean, it has that kind of Line of Duty sheen to it.
Yeah,
doesn't
but I
it?
Think so, this shows just how far ITV genre has come, because mm-hmm. I think this is really top notch stuff. This
yeah.
is like, you know,
yeah, it's
ITV
really good.
And
it's
really productions.
Good. It's really good. In fact, I will go so far as to say, a spoiler, not for the show, that this is my pick of the week.
Oh gosh, that really is a spoiler.
It's a spoiler for the pick of the week section. Anyway, Malpractice, ITV, when is it on, Boydie?
Malpractice started yesterday, Sunday the 4th of May 2025. It continues on Monday and Tuesday, and then the final two episodes will be on next weekend.
Oh wow.
Sunday and Monday. Five episodes.
It allows you a bit of a lie down in between, because you do need to process what you've seen.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
What else is out this week, Boydie?
Well, what else is out? That's a very good question. The Handmaid's Tale has just started.
This is the belated sixth and final season of The Handmaid's Tale, which is already long started in the US.
Yeah, that's on Channel 4 Saturday nights. The first episode would have just went out Saturday, and it's just gone, and it will be on Saturday nights for the next, I think it's 10 episodes, maybe even more. I didn't go on about Doctor Who this week. I forgot to go do my usual Doctor Who kind of mini thing. But this is the episode that just went on Saturday, is the one with Millie Gibson, focused like last season's companion. And it's a, what has she been up to in the time when she's broken away from the Doctor, if you like. And it's really clever and intriguing, and kind of goes into really interesting territory that you might not expect. That was really good. This is not other stuff that we've missed. This is just stuff that has already been on,
right?
Clearly. Oh, Marie Antoinette. I don't know if anyone saw season one. This is season two of the lavish costume drama, which is on BBC Two Thursday at 9 o'clock. There's a Netflix Forever Judy Blume adaptation called Forever. That's on Netflix Thursday, the 8th of May.
And we'll probably be doing that on Pilot Plus this week.
Hopefully, if we can get hold of the screeners in time. Maybe we can.
I think I've got the screeners. Spoiler.
Oh, there you go.
So, sounds possible.
At least for you. There's intriguing. There's a documentary called Octopus on Prime Video on Thursday, the 8th of May. I only mention it because it's executive produced by Phoebe Waller-Bridge, who also does the voiceover. And all I would say is, when it was announced when Phoebe Waller-Bridge got her multi-zillion dollar deal with Prime Video, I wasn't expecting the first fruit of it to be a documentary about an octopus. But it is.
Well, she's a surprising creator.
She is a surprising creator. And there's a one-off drama on Channel 5 on Thursday called The Trial, with Ben Miles and Claire Skinner, which is set in Britain in 2035, when people and parents are blamed or held responsible for or held to account for their offspring's crimes. And this arrived in the Channel 4 schedule very, very late in the day, but it is on Thursday, and it's quite intriguing.
I quite like the sound of that. Maybe we should do that on Pilot Plus instead.
Well, we could bear in mind, put it that way. But I haven't put it, if you're wondering why it's not on the calendar, it's because, as I say,
it
dropped
in. That's exactly what he's getting.
Literally is what I was thinking,
yes. Of course you were, yeah. But that did, my excuse is it dropped in the Channel 5 schedule very, very late in the day, as I say. I think that's about
it. Also, next week is a wasteland, so maybe we'll do it then.
Okay.
Who knows?
Yeah.
What is our pick of the week? I've already given you mine. It's Malpractice.
Oh, it is Malpractice.
Malpractice, without a doubt.
Oh, we're all aligned.
Mm,
how lovely.
Super. Had to happen sometime.
It had to happen sometime. All right, well, that's it for this week's show. If you enjoyed it, please do head over and give us a 5-star rating. We need them. We want them. We demand them. And also, if you want to get in touch with us, at Boyd Hilton, at Kara Barrett, at James E. Dye, at Pilot TV Pod, and indeed, Pilot TV at empiremagazine.com. And that is the new mailbox address. On next week's show, what are we doing on next week's show? I mean, Murderbot comes to Apple TV Plus. That's exciting. I don't know if it's embargo, but it is happening. Yeah. Elspeth season 2 comes to Witness. I'm not sure I care. Love, Death and Robots season 4 comes to Netflix. Ditto.
Really not sure.
Code of Silence comes to ITV next weekend, so the yes. end of next week.
Yes.
So I genuinely don't know what we're going to end up doing next week. We'll have to figure that out.
Mm.
We shall see how it goes. Okay, brilliant. We're done. We're finished. We're out. I'm going to go off and have a long conversation with Agatha Christie.
You're obsessed.
Pilot out.